Did you know Nationwide is so much more than a great insurance company? They're one of America's largest financial services companies. Like how I'm more than just quarterback Peyton Manning, I'm also meditating Manning. Omaha. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side.
Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
More like Atlanta, Georgia, and Metro New Orleans. Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. Tell your smart speakers to play ESPN Radio. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. You can give us a call and tap into the show at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And the Who tonight is Tanitra Batiste along with Mark Zeno. You can also tweet us at Tanitra Batiste and at Mark Zeno. But we are going to take it to Big D in just a moment because, Mark, I know that you love drama. I love drama. It's always fun when we can talk about a little drama coming out of Big D as well. And, of course, we're here filling in for Amber and Ian tonight. And, you know, when I think about the drama that is going on in Dallas, it's probably a little bit petty of me to just be smiling and going, ha, 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 because it's one of those things where I kind of like that there's some drama there. Because, I don't know, I just kind of like to see drama in Dallas. It's just good for business, right? But this is on a more serious note. I think that the contract drama between Dallas and between Dallas Cowboys, Dak Prescott, it's been very intriguing and interesting for me because I can't believe we're having this conversation about one of the top QBs in the NFL, someone who was in the runner-up space for NFL MVP, and now they're embroiled in this ongoing decision of, for the franchise, are they going to extend him? Are they going to pay him what he's worth, whether you believe that from a market value perspective or whether you believe that from a performance perspective? And don't get me wrong, they, of course, have other things to deal with in Dallas, CeeDee Lamb's contract, Micah Parsons as well. But this is really where kind of the buck starts and stops because now it feels like there's a possibility, especially with some comments that came out of Dallas earlier this week, that maybe we won't see Dak Prescott with that star on his helmet come 2025. And in fact, Dak himself talked to KDFW Fox 4 out in Dallas and talked about whether or not there's a possibility or potential for a new contract there or maybe elsewhere.
You have to think about the future at times. And as I said, I looked up and as I said, all great quarterbacks, and it's honestly a lot of quarterbacks that have done that. And that's just the business and the nature of this game. And that's me not being naive to that and to those potentials. And as I said, if something like that happens, I'll be most certainly ready for it. I'm here in training camp and focused on this year. I'm on a contract for this year, and that's all I really care about. I get to play with these guys, get to play for a team that I love, and that's where my focus lies.
Zeno, are the Cowboys really going to let Dak hit free agency? I mean, he sounds like he's good if they do or if they don't, but will they?
Well, yes. The short answer is yes, because they would have not let it get to this point.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked about repeatedly, you know, you do not let franchise quarterbacks get to the last year of their deal. You just don't, because you lose all the negotiating power. Now, Dak is playing ball with this whole thing. Because he knows he can't be franchised. So it's a little bit different for him in this scenario because they can't franchise him. Otherwise, this would be a dude right now who's holding out and not playing ball and say, good luck with whoever your backup is. You guys are screwed without me. But this is more about the Cowboys have always just wanted to date Dak. They've never wanted to marry him. And that's really what if they had different feelings, if Jerry Jones had different feelings, this would have been a fait accompli already. We have seen this repeatedly over and over again. I mean, Jordan Love just got $255 million based off of 8 games. Dak Prescott has over a half a decade of proven winning experience. Say what you want about the postseason.
Yeah.
A different conversation. But weeks 1 through 17, now 18, Dak has proven time and time again, you're a playoff team, you're going to be competitive, you're going to win more games than you're going to lose, and he should be paid adequately. So if the Cowboys wanted to extend him, they would have done this already. They would have never gotten to this point. He is going to free agency. The Cowboys are saying goodbye, and they'll try to figure out what happens next. Short of Dak winning a Super Bowl this year, they are likely not bringing him back.
Indeed, indeed. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. Your small business keeps you on the go. Progressive Commercial Insurance keeps your policy within reach with our easy-to-use mobile app. Learn more at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app series, XM Channel 80. Tanitra Batiste along with Mark Zeno here with you tonight. I couldn't agree with you more. And in addition to, just as you mentioned, a small sample size of success for Jordan Love, then you're looking at a Trevor Lawrence who, I think with 5 years, $275 million.
Same small sample size.
Yeah.
Eight games and a playoff win. That's all he's been good for.
Exactly.
That's it.
So, yeah, and yet, this is the money that he's walking away with, whereas Dak Prescott, and like you said, you can't really lay all of it at his feet for some of the playoff or postseason woes that these Cowboys have had,
right,
because he has performed at the level that there is the expectation that there has been for him. But I do feel like this is one of those where maybe Dallas kind of overplayed themselves. Maybe Jerry Jones kind of overplayed his hand. But there are so many teams out there that if you're not careful, and listen, Zeno, I'll tell you right away, I'm kind of salivating at this and chopping at the bit as a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. But there are a number of teams that would be more than willing and able to your point, not want to just date him. They want to marry him, and they want to be in a long-term relationship and marriage with Dak Prescott. There are a number of suitors that if he is a free agent, they'll be standing there waiting for them. And Mark Spears talked about that, one of our ESPN NFL analysts on Get Up.
Don't you ever get it twisted. Dak Prescott will be the shining star of free agency for a number of teams.
Oh, yeah.
You think if Pittsburgh situation don't work out, they wouldn't want Dak Prescott to be the quarterback? You think in Las Vegas, if they knew he was going to be a free agency, they wouldn't already get ready for him to show up?
Yeah, and not just those teams, but you kind of look around and you look at the New York Giants, for example. You may look at the Seattle Seahawks even. I just don't think that the Giants have their franchise QB. The Seahawks don't have their franchise QB. Exactly. Right. If you read the tea leaves, they don't believe it either. And granted, it may end up, and we'll talk about this later on in the show, but it may end up that they find themselves going into the draft looking for a QB. But they've seen this QB. They know what he's worth. You know, they're in the same division. They've had to look at him twice a year for several years now. They know what the quality is there. But yeah, I agree with Marcus Spears. I think that there are going to be suitors lining up to get Dak to say, hey, we believe you could be a franchise quarterback for our franchise.
I mean, again, this is a scenario here where the way the Cowboys view Dak and the way the rest of the world views Dak would be wildly different if he had worn a different helmet, different logo on the side of his helmet. If Dak Prescott was a Minnesota Viking his entire career, if he was a Buffalo Bill, if he was anybody other than a Dallas Cowboy, if he was a New York Giant, they would look at him completely differently all the way around. The problem is that Dak Prescott plays for an owner who clearly has his hands on too many things and pushes too many buttons and is too emotional about the situation and can't see that Dak is a top eight quarterback in this league and has been for the better part of a half decade. And the idea that all of a sudden that's changed, nah. Your playoff failures are your playoff failures. Look, remember, Peyton Manning failed for the first 8 years of his career in the postseason, couldn't beat Tom Brady, and then finally broke through. All it takes is one to change the entire narrative. I don't know if this is the year for Dallas to do that. A lot of people saying it's not. It doesn't feel that way. However, the idea that you're going to get better than top eight when you look at the other seven guys in front of them, like, we're just going to be able to pluck one of those from somewhere else. Good luck, Dallas. Yeah, I mean, bird in the hand here, T. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, because, like you said, I would give him top eight as well. And when you look at the league, it's kind of – there's no middle ground there, right? You've got your elite quarterbacks that are taking you to the next level or at least pushing you to the next level, and then you've kind of got your quarterbacks where you're saying, hey, okay – he might be just a good quarterback, if you will, but everything else around that quarterback is greatness. And don't get me wrong, there are some obviously solid players that are surrounding Dak in Dallas, but I think you have yourself an elite quarterback. We've not just seen in free agency a Kirk Cousins in Atlanta, for example, but then we've even seen in the draft where speaking of in Atlanta, they're saying, hey, we have ourselves a franchise QB, but we don't ever want to be in a situation again where we don't have one. So we'll go ahead and draft ourselves a quarterback that we think will be a franchise QB as well. Then five other teams joined the Falcons and said, hey, we're going to go ahead and draft a quarterback in these top 12 spots because we want to make sure that maybe we get that guy under center who's going to bring us back to prominence or bring us to prominence. So it's interesting to me, Zeno, that we're still having the same conversation we've been having about the Cowboys essentially since 1993. Yep. You've got a guy under center who could bring you back to that prominent space, and yet you don't want to pull the trigger.
And again, I think part of this is Jerry Jones is stuck in 1993. He still believes that Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith and that whole crew.
Yeah, Michael Irvin.
They have the same thing. They've tried to emulate the same thing here. Remember the Zeke Elliott days and Dak, and you know you had Amari Cooper
yes.
a couple of years ago. You know, elite-level receivers. Look, it's not a talent issue. Whether it's coaching, whether it's ownership, whether it's a variety or a combination of all those things, this is a very good team that, by all accounts, should make the playoffs once again. And by all accounts, is good enough to get to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Winning it is a different conversation. Getting there, they're good enough, especially in the NFC, to get there.
Yeah.
They keep having playoff failures. I mean, you can nitpick all those games and figure out why they lost and what happened and everything else. Guess what? You're going to be doing a lot of picking because that's just the reality of the way things go. But there's no reason the Cowboys should move on from Dak. When they do, ultimately, they're going to be toiling in anonymity for a couple of years, or at least by Cowboys standards.
Indeed, indeed. So Thursday night, Zeno didn't give us the debut we wanted of one certain QB1, but we did get the debut of some new rules. What do you think about them? We'll talk about it. It's Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
This is a PSA, or public sock announcement. Experts have declared Bombas socks as the best way to warm up chilly feet. These pairs are super cushy, soft, and designed for maximum coziness. Plus, for every pair purchased, another pair will be donated, so someone in need of essential clothing can stay warm this winter. Go to bombas.com/ESPNPod and use code ESPNPod for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ESPNPod and use code ESPNPod.
In the world of football, one name stands above the rest. Nick Saban, a legend known for building dynasties on the gridiron. And in the world of interior paint, Bear Dynasty is a legend in its own right. It's the best of Bear, with everything you want in a paint, all in one can. And it's available exclusively at the Home Depot. Just like Nick Saban's powerhouse defense, Bear Dynasty defends your walls with unmatched stain repellency and scuff resistance. And with one coat coverage, you'll be able to complete your painting project and bask in your team's colors before kickoff. Defend your walls and your game time with Bear Dynasty interior paint at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Valid only when tinted to colors from the Bear Dynasty and Marquee Interior One Coat Hide Color Collection.
Nice if this is the way it was in 2025. Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. Tell your smart speakers to play ESPN Radio. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. You can give us a call at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Amber Wilson and Ian Fitzsimmons are all normally on the call, but tonight you got Tanitra Batiste along with Mark Zeno filling in for Amber and Ian. And listen, it would be so cool, Zeno, if this was one of the conversations that we find ourselves having in 2025 as well, because if you happen to watch the game last night, the Hall of Fame game between the Chicago Bears and the Houston Texans, it was a little bit of a throwback. The first two kickoff returns under the NFL's new rules looked a lot like kickoffs of the past. In fact, the Texans wide receiver Steven Sims took the opening kickoff back 21 yards before he was tackled, which is a yard beyond where offenses used to begin their drives after a touchback. And, of course, we know that there were 8 kickoffs last night. 7 of those were returned. And, like I said, it kind of throws you back to yesteryear after the NFL, of course, overhauled all those kickoff rules this offseason in hopes of promoting more returns. What did you think about that? Kind of, how do you like that as far as what you might have seen last night, but also what we think is going to be what I'd like to think is an exciting return to that in this 2024 season?
I mean, look, the NFL continually will do these things in the name of, quote, player safety. I mean, I sometimes think the NFL fails to understand this concept, which is don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
Yeah.
And they constantly are trying to find an answer where guys don't get hurt and, you know, everything is perfect and both teams get the ball in overtime and then they get an extra possession and just let football be football. I was okay with the way things were last time where, you know, you call a fair catch, you get it at the 25, it's fine, take the touchback. I mean, at some point in time, guess what's going to happen? Someone's going to get hurt on a kickoff, and then we're going to go, oh, how do we fix this problem now? Like, you just keep spinning your wheels to try and find an answer that I think doesn't necessarily solve every problem. So it's interesting to see what they're doing with the shorter run. I mean, I guess because guys don't have a chance to go full speed, you can't get up as much, you know, you can't get up as much, you know, momentum to make a head-on collision with somebody. But you're not going to take the violence out of football, and you never will. And the NFL, to a certain extent, doesn't want to, you know, because, again, they paid like $750 million in concussion lawsuits. They don't want to not try to get ahead of everything and do everything they can. This isn't about player safety. It's about money. It's about protecting their investment and their assets and making sure that something like this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, because if we really think about this, the most appealing part of the NFL, let's keep it real, compared to the rest of the leagues is the violence. It's kind of like they can take out their aggressions on the field in a way that we could never do in our regular day-to-day jobs. That's the fun part. And,
right,
of course, you never want anybody to have any type of fatal injury or any kind of career-ending injury. But I can just think, like you and I, of course, have covered sports in Atlanta, and I can remember having the opportunity to see a Devin Hester really be able to return the ball and some razzle-dazzle. He, of course, the Hall of Fame inductee, a Cordero Patterson, and what he was able to do. And you kind of really minimize the opportunity to see that when you go so far and you lean so heavily into the quote-unquote safety aspect of it. But Dean Blandino, Fox NFL analyst who joined Carlin versus Joe, talked about what he thinks it might take for the NFL to use the new kickoff rules beyond just this one-year trial.
You want more returns. So that's number one. Then you have to look at the health and safety data and say, okay, did the rate go up? Did it go down? Was it static? And you look at those two things. And so ideally, you want more returns. You want less injuries. And you also want an exciting play back in the game. You want those explosive plays. You want, you know, we're looking at the Hall of Fame and a guy, Devin Hester, that's going into the Hall of Fame because of the kickoff return and because of special teams. So I think if you can have those things, you know, that combination of things, then I think the rule will have worked.
I think so as well. And interestingly enough, Devin Hester was on the broadcast and he said, quote, on the ESPN broadcast, I'm watching it, man, and I'm surprised that we're not seeing more big runs. You know, that's shocking, but hey, it's the first game. Of course, speaking of the Hall of Fame game, so I figure a lot of coaches are going to evaluate this game and try to figure out what they can do to get some more big plays. But right now, it's kind of shaky. But I think it's like you mentioned, like, it's big plays is what we're looking for. It's just going to take a minute, especially as some of those special teams coordinators kind of reset their approach based on this one-year trial of these rules.
What I'm going to say, because I have to get it out, and our production crew, James and Jovan, are probably going to go sideways, as will you. Devin Hester doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. He's not a Hall of Famer. He's not a Hall of Famer. He's
seven,
a positionless player.
Wait. James and Jovan.
He's a positionless player.
22 minutes.
He wasn't a good receiver.
He
wasn't a good DB. He's a positionless player. He played a position that's reserved for four-string wide receivers, okay? They'll let anybody in the Hall of Fame. The NFL will let anybody, the Pro Football Hall of Fame will let anybody in. There's no standards. They just, doesn't matter. If we like you and you're a nice person, we'll put you in.
Well,
sorry,
James,
just had to
Javon,
get
22 minutes in, yep.
22 minutes, and we almost got through, and we're here. We are here.
I'm not wrong.
No
disrespect to the guy. Had a great career. But not every great career deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
No, not every great career.
You telling me?
But
okay, should we put the best?
No,
should we put the best long snapper ever in the?
No,
should we put the best long snapper ever in the Hall of Fame? Should we put the best long snapper in?
Who is the best long snapper ever?
Morgan Cox, Baltimore Ravens. There you go. My opinion.
And how do you know that?
That's
because
the point.
He saw him up.
Because I covered him. Anyway,
him, right.
My point, like, the return play as a touchdown, okay, is as much luck as it is skill and, you know, blocking and everything else. Like, this is just not if you
but
don't have a position.
There are three phases of the game. So,
okay.
Like, we can't just take okay. out the third phase and act like it okay. doesn't have a part. You can
It has a part.
Field.
It has a part. I'm not
on,
saying it doesn't have a part. It just doesn't have a Hall of Fame part. If special teams was graded equally, like offense and defense are, we'd have a different conversation. They're clearly not. Because for every 20 plays on offense, there's one special teams play. For every 20 plays on defense, there's one special teams play. It's not the same. You don't weigh them the same. And they don't deserve the same credit. They just don't. There's eight kickoffs, punts, and field goals, whatever. It's 10% of the plays of a game, if that.
I akin that to a sixth man or a reliever.
No.
Like, there's
a
no way Mariano
actually
there's
plays.
No way Mariano Rivera's not going into. I mean, was he the first one to go into the Hall?
Unanimously?
Yes. Unanimously, right. So yeah. I just think that's one of those spaces, whether it's a Ray guy or Morton Anderson or, in this case, a Devin Hester, where you just got to give them credit for the piece and the part that they played in being able to flip a field, being able to sometimes outright win a game or put their teams in position to win a game with just one
being,
play.
Being the guy who led in return touchdowns is akin to being the NBA leader in alley-oop dunks. Like, it's a style play that may or may not have the effect on the outcome of the game. I don't get it. I'll never get it. I'll never understand it. Do I think kickers belong in the Hall of Fame? No, I don't.
You're just against special teams players at all.
Well, I mean, I have a huge disdain for kickers. I mean, you could put Adam Vinatieri in just because the number of game-winning, like, you know, as the one and only, and the amount of game-winning kicks he had and the amount of Super Bowls he has and everything else. But after that, nobody else deserves to be in, period. They're all kickers. They're not even football players. They're soccer players wearing football uniforms.
They're soccer players wearing football uniforms. You got to love it. You got to love
it. But these are the guys who don't even practice with the team.
Well, you know what? Let Courtney Cronin weigh in and let us know what she thinks about special teams. It's Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in detail.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like UNTUCKit or Allbirds, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. On the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout UNTUCKit uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/network.
Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80. Tell your smart speakers to play ESPN Radio. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. Give us a call at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, or tweet Tanitra Batiste and Mark Zeno, at Tanitra Batiste, at Mark Zeno, especially if you don't exactly agree with Zeno about special teamers getting into the Hall. I mean, I know that you have feelings about this and thoughts about this, so let us know. But first, I want to get the thoughts of someone who knows the Bears oh so well, including their Hall of Famer, and that is Courtney Cronin, our ESPN Bears reporter. Courtney, I've got to start off asking you this. I initially wanted to ask about your thoughts and your biggest takeaways from last night, but I got to start here. Mark Zeno does not think that special teamers should be in the Hall of Fame. I, for one, think that Devin Hester earned his way into the Hall of Fame as a special teamer. What say you?
Yeah, Tanitra, I'm with you on this. Sorry, Mark. That's a horrific opinion, especially when you look at the career resume of someone like Devin Hester, who's the single greatest returner we've ever seen in the game. So if there's anyone from the special teams realm, and obviously he wasn't just a special teamer. He was, of course, drafted as a cornerback, made the transition to wide receiver.
But he was a below-average quarterback. He was a below-average wide receiver.
And his biggest impact, if you'd let me finish, was on special teams and what he did to revolutionize what returns are in the game. So, Tanitra, I'm with you. I think that this is a no-brainer. It's a slam dunk. And his career resume speaks for itself. If not him, then who? And I just one more point here to finish this one off. If other people didn't think he was had a resume worthy of the Hall of Fame, he wouldn't have got in on the first ballot the absolute first instant he was eligible for the Hall of Fame.
Zeno, I love one word that Courtney threw out there, and I think it goes beyond stats. Revolutionized the position. He revolutionized the way that kick returns and punt returns were approached. That's so very critical. But I digress. I digress, Zeno. I'm going to let you jump on in and say what you say.
She said what she said. I said what I said.
We're talking about the Bears. We're talking about the greatest special teamer who happened to be a Bear ever. But go on.
The point simply is this, okay? Revolutionized a position that doesn't exist. He's a positionless player. Fourth-string wide receivers are picked to do this job. Guys who can barely make a roster are picked to do this job. If it was so important, they would put starting wide receivers there. If it was so important...
Mark, I respect you. This take is so, like, absurdly bad. We have a lot of bad ones on ESPN Radio. I obviously sometimes fall into that category. This one might actually take the cake. If this conversation right here does not make the show note tonight, then I have failed as a radio host for absolutely burying your argument that if anybody could do this, that they would just put them back there. That's the whole point. Devin Hester wasn't just anybody. He was somebody who revolutionized the position. He's somebody that has done something that will never be seen before. So you encapsulate that, you enshrine that, you forever preserve that in history because you'll never see it again. You'll never see it. Whether it's the rules, whether it's the way that we've changed football, whether it's the way that these kickoffs now are a completely different way. It looks completely different from what it was in Devin Hester era. You know, hell, we have guys who are playing like single wing football who are in the Hall of Fame. Like, are you going to say just because that's not part of today's NFL, if that's the reason they don't belong in there? That's nonsense. Devin Hester of his era and of all eras in the NFL, greatest returner of all time. I would have been so sad if my childhood did not consist of watching him in his 92-yard kickoff in the Super Bowl and having seven returns and kickoff as a rookie. It's incredible stuff, and there's absolutely no convincing me otherwise that he does not belong in the Hall of Fame.
Okay. Well, I will defer to you in this case. I still don't think there's a lot of guys who get in the NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame that don't belong in my opinion, but that's neither here nor there. I think it's the easiest one to get in. I think the voters are all shills, and if you're a nice guy and they like you, they'll put you in. Because you're going to see a whole rush of quarterbacks get in that don't belong in. Phillip Rivers, Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford, you know, Carson Palmer's not going to get in. But this whole era of passing quarterbacks, they're all going to walk right into the Hall of Fame, and they don't belong there. They had really good careers. They're very good players. That doesn't make them Hall of Famers.
It's the hardest Hall of Fame to get into. So what you're pontificating on is not rooted in any fact just yet. Because the committee has to vote on these guys. And all the players that you just mentioned, none of them are going to be up in the next 2 to 3 years when we start seeing more of the passing era of quarterbacks start to go in. Like, this is a selective Hall of Fame. Aren't we glad about this? It isn't the basketball Hall of Fame. We know baseball obviously has had politics play a role in players who get in versus those who don't. I think the Pro Football Hall of Fame, for all the flaws of the NFL, the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the selection committee oftentimes, more than not, actually get it right.
Well, again, I think their voting process is a little bit flawed, personally. The narrowing down thing. Either you get votes to get in or you don't. Like, the narrowing down process, and then you have to... And then they have to put six guys in every year. No, you don't. You don't have to put six people in. You could just put one in. You could just put two in. You don't have to shove six guys in. That's where the Pro Football Hall of Fame gets it wrong.
Well, I think where the NFL is actually maybe getting it right, Zeno, maybe getting it right, Courtney, is on the kickoff rule. We saw 8 kickoffs last night. 7 of them were returned. I know we didn't see anything remotely spectacular like we'd been accustomed to seeing with Devin Hester, but what are your thoughts in terms of that rule coming back this year, what you saw last night, what you think we're going to see this season with it?
It's going to be ever-evolving, and that's the thing that I think most coaches were looking at coming out of last night. How did the Bears and Texans handle it, and what more do we need to focus on in terms of fixing it, in terms of scheming it differently going forward, because it wasn't explosive. I mean, you heard Devin Hester, greatest kickoff returner of all time, talk about it on the broadcast last night. He thought there would have been more explosive runs. I get it. It's the first time that they've been able to rep this in a live game situation, so the two illegal formations for guys leaving early, you expect those things. You probably also expect that if this is supposed to produce more returns, they're going to actually get returns that go past the 30-yard line. That was the incentive for the NFL to, you know, not do away with the kickoff altogether, but to try to modify it. So I guess I'd say I'd give it like a solid C+, B- on what it looked like in its debut. It wasn't the most exciting thing, but hopefully this will allow coaches and special teams coordinators specifically to look down the roster to try to find guys who fit this quote-unquote dynamic return and utilize players who might be fighting for a roster spot to put them in a situation where they can actually contribute to a team and aren't just holding on to a game day spot because they might be somewhere on a kickoff that never actually makes it out of the end zone.
Courtney, are they trying to make perfect the enemy of good with the kickoff? I mean, again, the constant tweaking to me gets irritating. Like, I mean, you had a thing that, whether it worked or not, people just got used to. I mean, not getting back to the Devin Hester thing, but do we need kickoff returns for the game? Like, is it something that people are like, I'm tuning in because I can't wait to see a kickoff return. Like, I just don't think fans are in that mindset where whether you get a kickoff return or not changes the viewership or the enjoyment of the game.
They were never going to do away with it altogether.
Right.
I think that just would have been too controversial for the game. What, like trot them out and, you know, trot the ball out and start it on the 25 without any sort of action in between when teams change possession. But this one came with a lot of controversy because of how different it looks and how different it feels with the setup zone. And, you know, it's supposed to be a safer play. Now, I thought I saw some pretty hard collisions last night, especially you know, that second return that Tyler Scott, the wide receiver, had to the Chicago Bears, like he got rocked. And you do wonder, okay, is that technically a safer play? Guys don't have a longer, you know, lead up time to hit other guys when they're running full steam, but give it some time. We really can't like judge this thing yet to see if it has, you know, impacted the game, made that play less boring. But like what we know is that the play was boring. The play was losing its luster because of the rules that were done against. I mean, hell, they took the wedge out of the game for a reason, for safety, but that has stopped that play from being as exciting as it was in the you know, late 2000s. So they had to find a workaround for it. We'll see if this ends up generating the explosive returns that these coaches have told us they feel it will. But that's not something, honestly, I bet we won't even know the real return on investment here until after this season and maybe even into next year when, you know, everything's cyclical in the NFL. So however it happens, whatever happens over the next month, then teams are going to start conforming to that. And then, of course, when we get into the regular season as well, coaches are going to have a chance to tweak it even further, and we're going to see how it's officiated. All those things are going to factor into whether there are more rule changes voted on here for this kickoff in the future.
Yeah. Now, former Browns defensive end Alex Brown was on the show last night, Courtney, and he said the expectations for Caleb Williams and these Bears is to make the playoffs. And I'm kind of leaning in that direction, too. I think the NFC North is very, very intriguing, and I think there's every opportunity there. But what do you see as far as the expectation for Caleb and for the Bears, especially a possible run to the postseason?
Yeah, it's been a while since they've actually won a postseason game. They were there in 2020 because they backed their way in, but they haven't won one since the 2010 season. It's tough when you are in the Bears division, when you look at Green Bay and Detroit, and knowing that those teams have quarterbacks who are really good and not going away. Let's let Caleb Williams acclimate to life in the NFL first before we put like true, hard, this is a playoff team, this is not a playoff team declarations on this team, because we honestly don't know yet. We haven't even seen him in a preseason game. The baseline expectation should be 9 wins, I think, because it's not based on, oh, Caleb's so great or he's got 3,000-yard receivers. Yes, all of that matters. Look at the schedule. Weeks 1 through 10, they don't face Patrick Mahomes. They don't face Jordan Love. They don't face Jared Goff, any of these like really good quarterbacks in the NFC. I mean, Matthew Stafford is in there, yes, but it's mostly first and second-year quarterbacks. So actually, I think the schedule lines up to where if they want to bank wins early, if they feel that they can do that, it's probably their best way to getting to a 9-10 win season, maybe, because your division schedule starts week 11. You face Green Bay, Minnesota, and Detroit three times, you know, six times in 8 weeks. So that's where they have no room for error at that point, so you can't really play with your food early on if they do expect to be a team that's vying for a spot in the playoffs. But it's going to be hard when you have those other two teams, and unless we're thinking that the NFC North is going to be the AFC North and get three in, it's going to be a tough pass.
Indeed. Courtney Cronin, ESPN Bears reporter, appreciate you stopping by the show.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Don't say bad things about me, Courtney, after you hang up.
I think she's going to say bad things about me after she hangs up.
I think she's going to say it, too, just so you're prepared for it.
Yeah.
Good news, I think, coming out of Chicago, but maybe some better news coming out of the district. Commanders fans, we're going to tell you why. It's Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio with Tanitra Batiste and Mark Zitto.
Finding the right employee for your company is tough. One wrong hire can be a major setback. You're not alone if you face this. A recent survey by Robert Half shows nearly half of hiring managers readily admit to making a bad hire. Luckily, there's a solution. With Robert Half's specialized recruiter's experience, combined with our award-winning AI, you can have the right skilled professional in place quickly. We understand what it takes to build winning teams because at Robert Half, we know talent. Discover how we can help at roberthalf.com/talent.
With Amex Platinum, you can really be in the now. Access to Resi Priority Notify.
Yes.
4 p.m. checkout with fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel.
We needed this.
And dedicated card member entrances at select events.
Let's go.
Means you can focus on the present moment. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex. Card member entrance access not limited to Amex Platinum card.
Black or white. Right here. That's exactly who you have on Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. Tell your smart speakers to play ESPN Radio. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. You can give us a call at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Tanitra Batiste, along with Mark Zeno, otherwise known as Your Black and White. And the reason we're playing that, of course, is because that song was super hot in 1992, that from the late, great Michael Jackson. But you know who else was super hot in 1992? Washington. Now, granted, they weren't the Commanders at that time, but they were still Super Bowl winners. And the question is, why your team will win the Super Bowl, Washington Commanders?
Why your team will win the Super Bowl.
It's going to be one of the greatest moments of my life.
With Amber and Ian.
We're going to win.
Yes! Victorious!
The Washington Commanders.
If you live in the DMV, it is indeed going to be your happiest, greatest day or year of your life in 2025 if you guys are hosting that Lombardi Trophy again. And maybe you can do it. This is a team that went out and got itself what I feel is a great, I'll say really good. We won't say great, right? We'll say Dan Quinn is a really good head coach. I think what I will say is I think their quarterback is going to be great. I think that that's an excellent fit for the Washington Commanders in Jaden Daniels. I really like what I saw to Terry McLaurin. I think they have pieces. And I think that although they did lose Montez Sweat on defense, they've still got some pieces on the defensive side of the ball to maybe put themselves in position to be contenders. But Zeno, what say you? Commanders? Contenders? Super Bowl?
If they are going to contend this year, everybody's going to fall to. Jaden Daniels will have an amazing breakout rookie year and he'll be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. If they're going to win this year and be competitive and actually talk about having a Super Bowl, it's because Dan Quinn will have fixed that defense the same way he did in Dallas, the same way he sort of did in Atlanta when he was here. He has to transform that defense into something that is just incredible. If he can do that, and he's got a track record and a proven track record, even in Seattle, of doing the same thing, putting together a defense with a young quarterback and a running game that was good enough to win a Super Bowl, then guess what? He can do it again in Washington. And if he can do that, then, yeah, this is a team that is going to probably make some noise this year. I think that's a very – like you said, it's a very good roster, particularly on offense. I don't think we give enough credit to the weapons that are on the offense there.
Absolutely.
Between Brian Robinson, Antonio Gibson, Terry McLaurin, Jovan
Jahan Dotson, I think. Yeah, I would have to put – yeah, I'd throw him in there too.
He works with us. Jahan Dotson, I mean, they have a lot of toys to play with on the offensive side. If they can get it right and be able to score just a good enough amount of points, the defense being fixed will carry them.
I think that's a great call that you make there as well. You look at Austin Eckler and what he could potentially bring. If any time you have the opportunity to give a rookie QB a two-headed monster in the run game, it's good. I'd expect to see a Zach Ertz have a quality year as well, especially if he can be healthy. There are some really good pieces there. And Zeno, you made a great point about what he's able to do defensively. There are times when you and I may not have seen what we thought we were going to see maybe in Atlanta with Dante Fowler, but there are times when Dan Quinn can get the best and the most out of players. And even like a Bobby Wagner, you know, he can go into, say, players and what they did 3-4 years ago or kind of one-hit wonderish, and he's able to get it out of those players. So I agree with you. I think he's got some pieces still on the defensive side of the ball. That's where he shines, and I think that's going to be a good look for them, especially because they do have an offense that has some firepower.
Yeah, again, I mean, this is certainly a team that I think is in a division that's more winnable than we want to give it credit for.
I
think that is the other component of this thing. You know, obviously the Giants are kind of figuring out what they are. The Cowboys look like they may fall off a cliff. I don't believe that, but some people are saying that it's not going to be their year. And then you add in the Eagles, who were so hot last year and dropped off a cliff. And were eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. So there is a chance to go from worst to first in this division because everybody else might have taken a small step back.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think, too. Sometimes it's not so much what you do, but sometimes it's what the other team doesn't do. And, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We don't know for sure if Nick Sirianni and company have fixed all of the things that ailed them towards the back half of last season. Now, we know some of it was injury. I still think Jalen Hurts was more hurt, no pun intended, than maybe we knew. But the reality is that you did lose a stalwart in a Jason Kelce, if you will. So, you know, you look at that situation and how are they going to manage through not having him available, not just as great a player as he was, but also one of your fearless leaders, if you will. And I think that could be something that's critical. We don't know what Dallas is going to be just in terms of whether or not the drama that we've seen with Dak Prescott and for that matter with what they're going to do with CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons. We don't know how that's going to end up playing itself out. And then you look at a team going just back to the Eagles for a second. On the defensive side of the ball, you don't know what the departure of a Hassan Reddick is really going to do to that defense. So I do think you're right in that because there are variables for those other teams that have not been addressed, we don't know how they're going to play out for the rest of the season. Maybe the Commanders kind of sneak in there, if not sneak in and surprise everyone and win the NFC East. Maybe they sneak in and they're the second wildcard team coming out of that division.
Again, I think this is a team that's flying under the radar.
Yeah, yeah.
I think when we talk about every year, you know, we see 5 or 6 teams that didn't make the playoffs last year get in. This could be a team that all of a sudden upsets the apple cart that nobody saw coming.
Yeah, I think the same. And I think you're going to appreciate this as well. Very interesting stat lines. The Commanders compiled a 6-10-1 record against the spread last season, despite of what their record ended up being. A total of 10 Washington games last season went over the point total, and Washington went 1-3 games when it was listed as the money line favorite last season. But when I say those things to say, I think that just backs up, as someone who knows that world of betting so very well, how maybe even looking at those little pieces from last year show you that this is indeed a team where there's so much energy and attention paid to what's going on in Dallas. So much energy and attention paid into whether or not there's going to be a bounce back in Philly. But the Commanders kind of showed you some things in that betting space last season as well.
No, and part of the reason why they went over is because their defense was terrible, right? Towards the end of the year, they couldn't stop a nosebleed. So Dan Quinn gets that fixed from the get-go. And if they can start limiting opponents from scoring, and again, they lose some pass rushers, you know, and it's just not the same team it was a couple of years ago when Ron Rivera had it, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. But again, I'm not counting them out. I still think there is a way that they surprise people coming up this year.
Yeah, I would say the same. I'm very intrigued about what this is going to be for this team. I know for me, seeing Terry McLaurin, I think that's another weapon that people just don't give him enough credit for what he's able to do. So I think that's a nice weapon for Jaden Daniels as well, because, hey, you just never know until those players get on the field. But there may be a player that we won't see on the field anytime soon. Should we be concerned about him? We'll talk about that next. It's Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.